Welcome to the Femi Pod. These conversations are for women runners that go beyond running. Brought to you by your Femi founders, Lydia O'Donnell and Esther Kewen. To the Femi Pod for episode 140. It is great to be back. We've taken a couple of weeks off, but I'm stoked to be here with the one and only Dr. Izzy. Dr. Izzy is our Femi endocrinologist. She's been on the team for a long time. She's been on the Femi podcast many times, returning offender, but we're really excited today to jump into a conversation about returning to running post-reds. But before we do so, Dr. Izzy, how are you?
I'm amazed that it's 140 podcast episodes. I can remember back in, I think, 2021 when we did our first Femi podcast together, and it's now almost the end of 2025. So that's incredible. Yes. No. And I'm well, and things have changed a lot since those first episodes when I was still in my training. And now I've been a specialist for a couple of years, and looking after women with reds is my kind of bread and butter work. And what I spent a lot of my time doing. So there's been a lot of journeys for Femi, and I've been on that journey. And yes, I'm quite nostalgic reflecting on that.
Yeah, it's been a long time, and a lot of information has been spread through Femi, but also so many other podcasts that you've done as well. You've been on some pretty big podcasts over the last few years, and the information that you have and the knowledge that you have is just so important. And I think we talk about it all the time, but it's just never enough. So I think it's really good to be able to do this and bring this information to light, because it is a question we get asked by our community all the time. And obviously, from a coaching perspective, me and S can have an opinion, but there is nothing better than expert advice from yourself. And then we're actually going to do a follow-up to this episode with our dietitian, Sarah Widdowson, and we'll get really into the nitty-gritty on the nutritional side of it with her. So come back next week for that one. But let's dive straight in, Izzy. So firstly, let's just talk about reds as a whole. Can you kind of define what reds is and maybe how it differs from what used to be known as the female athlete triad?
So previously, what was called the female athlete triad was a triad of amenorrhea, bone stress injuries, so stress fractures or bone stress injuries, so pre-stress fractures, and eating disorders. And the name was changed by the kind of International Olympic Committee in 2014 to relative energy deficiency syndrome for a multitude of reasons. One, because it can happen in men, so male athletes can underfuel. It impacts much more than just our bone health. So really it's a syndrome. And anytime we have a syndrome, it's not a one specific diagnostic test. It's a series of symptoms or results that a few of them, when they come together, will classify as having that syndrome. And so it's a syndrome of lots of different effects on our body from having prolonged low energy availability, so not enough nutrition in to meet our energy output from our exercise and our non-exercise related activities. And the name was changed from female athlete triad to relative energy deficiency syndrome because we know, it impacts men. They obviously don't have the obvious sign of the loss of periods, but they do have some other signs related to low testosterone. But it impacts much more than bone health. We see changes in our immune health, in our recovery, in our, obviously in our reproductive health, but also how we feel. We see multiple different endocrine kind of organ systems involved, like our thyroid, our growth hormone, our adrenal gland. So it really is a whole body syndrome that can impact everything from the athlete's performance, their immune function, recovery, their mental health. And the real underlying driver is that, prolonged low energy availability.
And that low energy availability can come from obviously not eating enough is one thing, whether that's like subconscious or conscious. I know I went through reds myself nearly 10 years ago now. And at that time, I was definitely going through disordered eating behaviors, and I was on purpose restricting my diet. But when we chat with Sarah next week, we can also go into this a little more, but I know that for some people, they aren't even aware that they're not fueling enough, right?
All the time. And I have people come and see me and I go through their nutrition and explain to them, you're really not eating enough for how much training you're doing. And they think, but I'm not losing weight. Surely I must be eating enough. But your body is very good at trying to preserve your weight in the setting of low energy availability, and that's a survival mechanism. And I, you know, often send them to a sports nutritionist. They come back and see me in a few months. They are a different person. They're brighter, they are more outgoing, they're just happier. And they say, gosh, I had no idea how flat I was. And that was just by accident. Often I look after young university students. They have time and financial pressures that make it hard for them to just really be on top of their fueling. And they've never had the education. So they're thinking they're doing a good job because they're, you know, having their breakfast, lunch and dinner and not missing meals. But it's really by accident. And I really do encourage, especially any, I think anyone training for a marathon should see a sports dietitian. It's not normal to be, you know, and when I say normal, it's not the norm to be running 50, 60, 70 Ks a week. And we just don't realize how much extra nutrition we need to, you know, be able to perform that training and recover from that training.
Yeah, I saw an Instagram post the other day and it was a woman who'd done a marathon and she was talking about the impact on her body from doing the training, and she was listing off a whole bunch of things, and a lot of them to me pointed to the fact she had Reds actually. And I was like, I think she's completely unaware, because those things that she was going through, I'm like, aren't actually normal. But it's weird how us as athletes, we kind of accept being tired all the time. We accept, you know.
Exactly. Yep. Being sick is the one I see a lot. You know, people getting coughs and colds. I can remember talking to someone, I was doing a half Ironman and talking to some friends who did the full Ironman. They said the secret in the Ironman is in the training to not get depressed and not get sick. And I remember thinking, guys, you were just not eating enough. So, yeah, totally agree. A lot of these signs and symptoms with the fatigue, the muscle stiffness, the poor recovery are just that underfueling.
And what are some of the other signs? I mean, I can kind of list off the things that I was facing when I was in Reds, which was like my hair was falling out, my skin had broken out quite severely. My bowels were not working at all. I was not going to the bathroom. I was maybe going number twos every few days, which was pretty horrific at the time. But are there any other kind of key signs that we should look out for when it comes to understanding whether maybe we are going through Reds?
Well, maybe we break it down into the different organ systems that are involved. So, for example, you know, the classic one we think about is losing periods, and that is because the brain turns off the messages to the ovaries. And to preserve energy, because carrying a pregnancy wouldn't be a good time. And that loss of estrogen can impact our skin, our hair can cause vaginal dryness. Before losing periods, people may notice that their periods are getting lighter or maybe further spread out. Then your bowels are being constipated. That's twofold if you're not eating enough. So just enough food to create normal bowel movement. That's a common, you know, patients might present with. They're told they've got irritable bowel syndrome, but actually they're under eating or, you know, eating disorders. And our gut is a muscle. It's a big, long muscular tube. And if we are not eating enough, our muscles don't work properly. And so that muscular tube starts to not function very well. Also, our thyroid hormones are suppressed. So sometimes I've seen patients inappropriately be prescribed thyroxine hormones because their T3 is low. So we have two thyroid hormones, FT4 and FT3, and T3 is particularly important for our metabolism, so keeping our body warm, heat production. And I've seen patients inappropriately prescribed T3 or told they have T3 deficiency, which isn't really a thing. And it's rather their body's having an adaptive response to slow down their metabolism and preserve energy. So that presents with feeling cold, again, constipated, thin hair, dry hair, so a lot of the symptoms that you just said. Then we know people get something called growth hormone resistance, which is where growth hormone's a bit complicated. It comes from the pituitary, but it goes to the liver and tells the liver to make something called IGF-1. And that is really important for muscle recovery. You know, it's what bodybuilders abuse. You know, it's like a part of a steroid. And so we have, you know, poor muscle recovery. And I know the speaker, she's a dietitian, Renee McGregor, talks about how she sees people. She's, you know, very well known in kind of Reds. She'll have an athlete walk into her room and she says they look a bit squishy, and I hope you don't mind me mentioning this, Lydia, but I remember once you did this amazing post where you showed photos and you said, like, I don't like to be this about aesthetics, but I want you to see the difference in my physique when I was properly fueling. And when you had rants, of course you still look great, but you weren't as muscular, you weren't as toned. And that's because your body wasn't giving you, you know, it wasn't putting energy into building muscle. And you actually looked a lot leaner and more muscular when you were fueled appropriately. And that's that growth hormone and that lack of recovery. We also have higher levels of inflammation in our body when we are in reds, and that's part of like low iron as well. Low iron is really common in this. It's not a hormonal change, but if we're not fueling properly, and athletes use a lot more iron and lose more iron than non-athletes. So the iron deficiency can add to that muscle fatigue, immune health, and that's a big one. When we think about immune health, we think of coughs and colds, but also soft tissue recovery. It's our immune system that gets, you know, if you have a scratch on your hand or a bruise, a scratch on your hand or, you know, a knee from a fall on a trail run shouldn't take 2-3 weeks to heal. But if you're in a state of low energy availability, that you will see prolonged injuries and prolonged, like I said, even like a scratch. If we go through the different organ systems, then we have impaired immune function, decreased thyroid hormone, decreased growth hormone, slowed bowel, so gastrointestinal. I haven't talked about adrenals, which there's so much misinformation about cortisol, but people in reds will have high cortisol. It's nothing wrong with their adrenal glands. It's an adaptive response. So, you know, the mental health and anxiety part of reds is multifactorial, but definitely high levels of cortisol because you're not recovering would be part of that as well. So you can see it is really this whole body, syndrome.
Yeah, I feel like I definitely ticked all the boxes. Yeah, I feel like what's important to say is you might not suffer from all of it, right? Like there might just be one or two signs that you are suffering, and just because you maybe haven't even lost your period doesn't mean you're not in reds.
And people might be on contraception as well is another one. So it's really important to know that when you're on the pill and you take the sugar pills, that is not a normal period. It's a withdrawal bleed induced by the tablets you take. And the pill gets a bad reputation, and it's actually more the poor medical care that's given rather than the pill being the issue. You know, someone goes to the doctor with period pain and just is told, you know, go on the pill. That's not the pill's fault. It's the crappy medical care. But the pill can be great for some people. So, you know, periods might not be a sign in that setting. But, and also athletes after menopause, or if someone's had a hysterectomy and they don't have a uterus anymore, won't have periods. But yes, you can have those milder signs. And I've definitely been parts of my life when maybe when I was busy doing my medical training, where I probably did have mild reds, even though I did still have my period.
So maybe before we go into the recovery stuff, what are the things you look at as a doctor to actually diagnose someone?
So a big part is the history. I will look at blood tests, of course, but usually if someone tells me often they seem flat. If they're flat, they're not really enjoying their training, they're feeling tired all the time. The history is a big part of it. But in saying that, sometimes people really present bright and bubbly, even though they do clearly have reds. I will go through their training and look at what volume they're doing. I look at what do you do in the day? What is your job? Someone's a physiotherapist. They have a really active job, and those things need to be taken into account. I go through their injury history. So have they had any stress fractures? Have they had any soft tissue injuries? How did they recover from those injuries? Those prolonged, everyone is different, but prolonged bone stress injuries and the type of injury they had. So like a femoral neck stress fracture is a very classic low energy availability hormonal injury pattern. I will also, find out more about their training loads. Has there been a big increase in their volume? Go through their nutrition and, find out, are they fueling before long runs? The amount of people who, they've signed up to the runner app and they're doing their 2 speed sessions and, long run from, almost no training and not fueling before they long run. So go through a really careful history. That tells you so much of a diagnosis. In terms of then investigations, I will do. So I will do reproductive hormones for women and men. We see men get low testosterone, potentially, there's subfertility is linked to reds in men. So So look at reproductive hormones. I will look at their thyroid. I'll do a TSH, a T4, and a T3. We often talk about, like, you hear in social popular culture or like on social media, you know, a full thyroid panel. You don't need to have all your thyroid antibodies checked routinely, but I would check a TSH, a T4, and a T3. And if I see that pattern of the normal TSH, the low T4 and low T3, that is quite indicative of REDS. I will look at their IGF-1 and their growth hormone, so growth hormone resistance. And I will also look at their iron studies, look at their markers of inflammation. And we'll talk a bit about the treatment, but for what I do, Lydia, usually I will, with my athletes, I always get their nutrition right first. I usually don't back off their training. If they're running like 120 Ks a week and they've got amenorrhea, maybe I will. But usually I say, this is a nutritional issue most of the time, not a training issue. I look at Elsie Wells, who is an Olympic runner and would do crazy amounts of volume, and she's just had a baby, you know, at 40. There's Olympic athletes that still have a regular cycle and they are doing big, big volumes. It's not usually the training, it's the fueling that is the issue. So, what I'll do is I'll monitor someone's bloods, you know, and see, okay, less, this is looking better, you know, these markers of energy availability are improving. As they are, you know, hopefully seeing the dietitian or, following a new nutrition plan.
Yeah, that is definitely a question we get all the time. You know, women who come to us and they say they've lost their period and they love running and they don't want to stop running. Have to stop because they don't have a period or have lost their period for a certain reason and potentially know that they are suffering from REDS?
So this is a great question, and I think this is where it is quite important to see a doctor or an endocrine, like a doctor, whether that's a GP or an endocrinologist, or a, you know, maybe some people see a gynecologist in setting of amenorrhea, who has an interest and understanding in female athletes. The other thing I comment, you know, one, because if you do blood tests, they often are normal, they officially meet normal reproductive hormones, but if you don't have a period, that is not normal. So I don't care what someone's blood tests are, if they haven't had a period for 6 months, your LH and FSH, that's the messages from the brain, and the amount of estrogen you're making at the ovaries, they can be at different parts of the cycle wildly different. So they can be in the official normal range in the setting of functional hypothalamic amenorrhea. Just briefly, when Lids is talking about losing periods, the term for that is functional hypothalamic amenorrhea. It's a bit of a mouthful, but I think it's important to differentiate that from REDS, because functional hypothalamic amenorrhea is an adaptive response to low energy availability, but it can also be in the setting of severe illness or psychological stress. And there is a lot of variation in when people lose their periods. And that can be, and I used to work in inpatient eating disorders, and I would have patients who are profoundly underweight with severe anorexia who would still have their periods. And then I will have female athletes with no eating disorders who might have just increased their volume a bit and have lost their periods despite having a totally normal, healthy BMI. And there is a strong genetic component to functional hypothalamic amenorrhea. And I have definitely had some athletes that go, this is so frustrating. I know this other person who's training more than me and appears leaner than me. Why have they still get their period? So there is a lot of individual variation. But to the person who's lost their period and wants to know, do they need to stop running? My short answer is no, you don't. We need to look at the factors for why you've lost your period. We need to not just assume that it is because you're an athlete. We need to check that there isn't anything else like a prolactinoma or some other conditions that could occur. Then if it is functional hypothalamic amenorrhea or FHA from REDS, we need to get your nutrition right. And especially I do a lot of work with patients with eating disorders, and there is some kind of mild disordered eating or orthorexia in athletes sometimes. And that usually these restrictive dietary patterns are often a somewhat maladaptive coping mechanism from, you know, to do with stress, that it makes people feel a sense of calm or in control or purpose when they are following quite restrictive dietary patterns. And I'm often educating my patients that this has become normal for you, but actually it's not normal to weigh all of your food or count your carbohydrates. This is actually a bit disordered. And so I do a lot of education in that setting, but I'm not going to take away two of the main coping mechanisms someone has. So if someone's coping mechanisms for stress are exercise and, you know, mild disordered eating, I'm not going to take both of them away from someone at the same time. And it's not the exercise that's the issue, it's the disordered eating or restrictive dietary patterns. So usually I will, depending on what their volume is and what their goals are. So if someone's had, you know, multiple stress fractures, and I might say, yes, we do need to cut down your running quite a bit before we build up your volume. Or they're wanting to have a baby and they are 37. And I go, okay, you don't have that many more fertile years. If you really do want to get your periods back as soon as possible, we might stop your running. But for the average person, that's not the case. I will make sure we get their nutrition right. I might drop down their volume a little bit. And then once we get their periods back, and I'll monitor those pituitary hormones and their estrogen, and I can tell them, oh, yes, this is improving. Look at how much estrogen you're making then, or look at what your LH was then. Look how much better it's come. We're on the right track, because it can be really hard for athletes. So they're like, I'm doing everything right. Why haven't my periods come back? But if you've been in a fast, low energy availability state, you're brave. Your brain thinks it's in famine, and 1 or 2 months of normal eating is not going to magically think, make your brain go, okay, we're safe now. So it does take time. But that's this, you know, ongoing monitoring of the patient. Sorry, I would say patient athlete. You know, depending on how that's going, I will back off their exercise, you know, either not at all, small amounts, or a lot, depending on the situation.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great advice. And it's definitely something that I love hearing from medical professionals. And I've had physios who are very similar, who they're like, yes, you have a niggle, unless you're like severely injured, obviously you have to stop running. But when you like maybe have a niggle arising, like how can we manage that niggle at the same time as you still running? Like, let's not just take away running completely unless you really, really have to. And this question's probably quite personal and maybe quite hard to answer, but for someone who has gone through REDS and is maybe coming through the backside of that, how long should it, well, let's just say how long should it take to recover from REDS? I can imagine that's quite hard to answer.
A lot of people ask me this all the time, and I say, well, it depends on how well we improve your energy availability. So I usually tell people they need, I don't really like talking about specifics, but you know, as a rough guide, I tell people you need to be having at least 2,500 calories, you know, more like 2,600 to 2,800 calories per day. There is some research to show that you need to have weigh more than 2 kilograms above what you were when you lost your period. And then usually people's BMI needs to be above 19, but there are some research, because there is individual variability, that some people's BMI needs to get to more 20, 21, 22. From my personal, you know, that's what the research says. From my anecdotal experience, I don't think weight is as much of an issue, because often I get someone to fuel and their weight doesn't change. And people will be in a low energy availability state and their weight, they're not losing weight. So I really see it's more about getting really on top of that nutrition. And that's usually, I say, you know, fueling before running, big, you know, meal after running, snacks between meals, and teaching people that listening to their appetite is not a good sign in athletes. If you're running 50, 60, 80, 100 kilometers per week, your appetite is not a good, and Sarah, our dietitian, will go into this, is not a good indicator of if you need to fuel. But going back to that, I think if someone's improved their energy availability and we are confident they're not in an energy deficit state, usually at least 3 to 4 months for periods to come back.
Yeah, we will definitely go into more detail with Sarah on like specifics and what food groups to concentrate on and to, in order to get like healthy fast. But even for me, when I think about weight, I actually weighed more than I do now when I had REDS. But like you were saying, Izzy, I was like puffy. I was like holding weight because my body was under such a state of stress from not giving it the energy it needed. So yeah, I imagine like the weight one is quite hard.
Totally. And, you know, and we've talked about this on podcasts. I'm the same. I've had functional hypothalamic amenorrhea as an athlete. And there is a component of age. We do know. But I, you know, you and I have both said we actually weigh a little bit less now than we did when we had FHA. But our dietary patterns are so much better. You know, carbohydrates are a big one. So carbohydrate availability. And there is data showing that at a lower carbohydrate diet, you are more likely to get functional hypothalamic amenorrhea, even if your calories are the same. But yes, I think the whole, like, you know, the kind of explosion of social media about, you know, calories in, calories out, which to some degree is true, has made us oversimplify how complex the body is and our ability to, you know, decrease and increase energy systems. So weight is not always a good indicator. And I have patients who might be in a BMI range that's officially overweight who have functional hypothalamic amenorrhea. And it's very frustrating, especially when they're given incorrect information of, oh, you know, you wouldn't have that just by looking at someone. It's ridiculous. So yes, I do think that nutrition is really the main thing that I would work on before talking about, you know, getting a specific weight number or a specific, you know, volume of running per week.
So what about the period? Like if we were to say to someone, cool, you've got your period back after not having it for, say, a year, would you recommend them getting like to a regular number of periods or a regular cycle over a certain amount of time to then be like, okay, now we can up your load and running?
Yeah, and it's hard because there isn't that much research in this of, you know, we see that things that help people get their periods back is it increasing their eating, decreasing their volume, running volume and gaining a bit of weight. But I usually say at least 3 menstrual periods before we increase your training volume. Then being really aware of those signs of REDS. Another new thing is research is going into heart rate variability. So WHOOP and some universities are doing some research into heart rate variability as like an early sign of REDS, whether that will be, you know, whether WHOOP will have a new function in the future going, you're at risk of losing your period based on, you know, some of this data. I'm sure that, you know, maybe that will exist in the future. But I say for people at least 3 menstrual periods back, and your body usually after those periods, 3 periods back, you know, that cycle is a little bit more robust, then we can increase someone's training volume, but making sure we don't get into the same error as before, as, you know, poor nutrition, underfueling.
Yeah, awesome. And is there any kind of other physical signs that you should look out for to know that you're kind of like out of the red, let's say?
Yeah. I'm just going to mention some as well that tell you that you are getting towards that system, that you are on the right track. Because so let's say you've improved your fueling and you're like, it's been 3 months, why haven't my periods come back? Increased vaginal discharge is one I tell patients about. So if you're getting increased vaginal discharge, that's a good sign that you're making more estrogen and that you're, you know, on the right track to getting periods back. Then definitely if you're, you know, recovering from your training better and your sleep is better, sleep is the one, you know, waking, feeling refreshed rather than still feeling tired, then, you know, the not getting sick so often, coughs and colds, it's a bit variable. Some people, even with quite severe REDS, don't seem to get the coughs and colds one. And then, you know, monitoring people's blood tests. So for me, if I have someone with FHA, I'll usually see them every 4 to 6 months. We will monitor their weight, monitor their bloods. And again, really, it's clinically the, you know, I'm feeling better. I've got more energy for my training. I can hit harder in my speed sessions. I'm not dragging my feet. And their performance improves as well. So often, because, and I've got a lot of male athletes as well who have REDS. So we don't have that period sign so much. And we look at those, you know, other kind of more subjective markers.
And just before we move on to more like running, returning to actual running, is the length of, say, the loss of period related to the length of time it's going to take you to return to running? Is there some correlation between that?
So another one that's been a little bit researched, but not that well researched, but generally, yes, the longer someone has lost their period, it does seem to take longer. And there is a there would be a genetic component to this as well, just keeping that in mind. Does seem to take longer to get menstrual periods back. Some people, and I do have a couple of athletes, I can, you know, maybe 2 or 3 that I can think of, and I look after lots and lots and lots of people with REDS and FHA who haven't got their periods back despite maybe 1 to 2 years of appropriate, you know, improved nutrition, weight restoration. And there is a genetic component to how we adapt, respond to stress. So I know this is a little bit off topic from the question, but I have had a few athletes that we know there's difference in the kind of stress hormone response from our adrenal glands and how that they respond to stress. And potentially there is reasons why people might take longer to recover. And I do see a kind of personality, you know, often they're quite more, I don't like using these words because it's the classic words that we describe, you know, hysterical women, but more that kind of type A, type A a little bit more on that. I don't want to say the word neurotic because it's just really gaslighty. But that very, you know, that highly strung type A personality. And there is some research to, you know, that would maybe show why some people might not get their periods back and take longer. But yes, the longer you have had reds, and younger women as well are much more sensitive to losing periods, and it takes younger women longer to get periods back. And they can't get as lean as like a, you know, an older athlete. So yes, the longer you've had reds, it does take longer to get back. And then there's individual genetic and age factors.
This is probably more of a personal question, but I'm definitely open to like having this conversation on the pod here. But I feel like since I went through reds, lost my period, I feel like now I'm more susceptible to getting into like this state of fatigue, whether that's reds or not. I feel like back in my early 20s, and maybe it's an age thing because I'm old, but I feel like in my early 20s, I was constantly stressing my body through training and able to like respond to it quite well. I never really went through any severe fatigue until I like had reds and lost my period and then came back from that. And yes, I've like had some really good training blocks between then and now, but I also feel like I am on the brink of it all the time now. Does that make sense? Is that like because I've gone through it before?
Yeah. I guess when we think about reds, it is a multi-system condition. And I don't think I would really say that, you know, someone might definitely be more susceptible to losing their periods, or maybe someone's individual metabolism may make them more susceptible to having reds. I don't think having it in the past would make you more susceptible to it in the future. There is interesting research, Lids, about masters athletes and how long someone's athletic career can be. And we see that people who are winning masters athlete events are not the people who are winning in their youth. And it's all, and I don't want to say that your athletic career is running out because you've been an athlete for too long. But just that is an interesting concept of how long can someone train at a high level as an athlete for? And, you know, like I said, with the research into masters athletes, which is a shame because my goal is to be a masters athlete. You know, I'm never going to make it as a normal athlete, but maybe when I'm 55, but maybe I just need to stop running now because it is some well, I've been running since I was 18, so damn. And my mental health really is dependent on running. Actually, it's not completely dependent. I have lots of other healthy coping mechanisms. I got, you know, injured in the past. So I had to learn that you can't have everything, you know, running on, you know, mental health for running, because otherwise if you get injured, your, you know, health deteriorates. But there is research showing that there's only so long that we can actually train at a high level. And especially in that master's athletes, it's quite interesting. Something, I don't know, the science, the exercise physiology, and this is something where I think an academic would be quite good to talk about, but in terms of, I don't know, cellular turnover and lots of complex, you know, cell metabolism things that we can't actually train at that really high level. But no, I don't think having reds in the past would specifically make you more at risk of reds in the future. Definitely functional hypothalamic amenorrhea. There are people that are very sensitive to physical, psychological stresses and lose their periods more easily.
Yes, it's probably the fact I'm just constantly stressed and training.
Maybe running a startup and having, I don't know, I don't want to share all your personal life on the pod, but you have had a lot in the last couple of years. I think that's something I talk to people, because I look after a lot of young mums who, you know, they're a nurse or they're a physio and then they've got two young children and then they're a pretty good amateur runner. You know, they're a three-hour marathoner and they're wondering, maybe they're seeing me because they're tired all the time and they're not recovering and they're wondering if they're in perimenopause. I'm like, oh, you're 41. It's unlikely. You've got regular menstrual periods. Your pituitary, FSH is not high. And I don't have a clear objective score that I can go, oh, but out of this, the 1 to 10 stress scale and mental load, you're an 8.5 out of 10. You know, I think we really want objective markers when we are, you know, that psychological stress and mental load is really high, but we don't have them, so we don't give it the significance that it deserves of its impact on how we feel. We know psychological stress, you know, our stress hormones travel through the bloodstream and influence every single cell in our body. And therefore, psychological stress is putting our whole body under stress. And so therefore, when we start our training, our body's already under a significant stress. And if we have that continued stress, we can't recover properly. And again, it's hard because we don't have this nice objective measurement. We can go, oh, you've improved. Now you're at 8.5. Now you're down to a 6 out of 10 stress. We don't have that. And I think that is frustrating. That's where we come up with, you know, fad conditions like, oh, you've got adrenal fatigue, and wanting to have these justifications for why we, you know, need some rest or why we need to listen to our bodies. But yes, sorry, a bit of off on a tangent, but we have this whole new generation of, as amateur running has exploded, there's a whole new group of people who are training like elite athletes and then having a full-time job. And I always tell people, you know, elite athletes, they nap in the day, and then they've got a masseuse, and then they've got a dietitian. They are not running startups, you know, supporting families, waking up the night to a baby, usually not. And we are expecting these amateur athletes to be able to feel and to train like elite athletes without taking into account all of those life, you know, other life factors.
Oh my gosh, I couldn't agree more. I feel like no one really gives stress the credit it deserves and what it can do to the body. And I feel like we need to get our psychologist, Dr. Lottie, back on the podcast to talk more about that, because it is such an important conversation to be having for all of us, just to understand, like, yeah, I feel like even myself, I just tell myself I'm fine. And I feel fine, but there's like a whole heap of stress on my shoulders that I aren't even aware of, and the impact of that as well.
And it takes time to recover from, you know, just from a burnout. And this is a bit off the topic, but we know from a, like, you know, psychological burnout is chronic unrelenting stress without recognition and without breaks. That's how really burnout happens. And we see changes in like functional MRI imaging, where we see the parts of the brain that respond to stress, like the amygdala and the hippocampus, and we see they're swollen in that state of chronic burnout. So this is a functional, you know, anatomical change in our brain. That is not going to get fixed from a weekend away. That takes months of time to recover. So it's an interesting research area as well. And I think it would be great if we had some more, I guess, kind of really objective things, that advice that we could give people, because, you know, that makes us feel validated in our experience. But I think having Lottie on would be great to kind of have a bit more of an understanding of the impact of chronic stress on our bodies physically and on our training and performance.
Yeah, definitely. We will line that one up. But let's jump back into returning to running. And obviously stress is part of that, so trying to eliminate that stress as much as possible, I think, would be helpful. And I can talk about this more from a coaching perspective, but from your medical perspective, Dr. Izzy, how would you recommend incorporating running back into your life after you have recovered and you've got that healthy, regular menstrual cycle and you are feeling good again?
I think having a coach is really important, someone to track your total running load. So let's say someone's come to me, they've trained for their first marathon, they lost their periods, and they had a grade 3 mid-tibial stress reaction. You know, I see stuff like this all the time. I would get their nutrition right, look at their markers of energy availability, their periods have come back, I'd maybe do some stuff to support their bone health, and then we'd get them back into their training volume. So usually it would be, you know, having a coach, making sure that you are having at least, you know, 1 or 2 rest days per, you know, per week, looking back at what happened last time, where were the issues that went wrong, and trying to not repeat those issues. But teaching people to be more in tune with their bodies, I think knowing when you need a rest day, you know, just before we started recording, I said today, I am completely depleted. I can feel I'm not recovered. I can feel there's inflammation in my body, and I had wanted to run, but I'm just going to listen to my body because I know I'm not going to be able to get much. You know, we get better through training from, you know, a stressor, adaptation, and improvement. I just don't think my body can handle any more load, and I'm not going to get much adaptions from today's session. And that is, we need to educate people on how to listen to their bodies and know when to pull back. So I would get people to work on that, you know, mind-body understanding more, gradually increase their training load. I will see them in a few months and monitor their reproductive hormones and make sure there aren't any of those kind of biochemical signs of low energy availability again.
Yeah, totally. I think from a coaching perspective, like if we were to look at your training program after you've recovered from REDS, we would look at the big things that are taking a lot out of your body, right? So it's like your long runs and your speed sessions. Those are the more like intense running sessions throughout your running week, and where we are asking a lot of your body. And we would try to bring them back into your program, but just in a really sustainable and gradual way. So it might be that we like slowly, ever so slightly increasing your long run each week. And then the speed session where, you know, you might be used to doing 1K reps and 5 minute reps and mile reps and this kind of short, sharp, fast stuff. We wouldn't maybe bring that in quickly. We would probably start you off doing some more like slow, gradual tempo work where you're working more at like that half marathon to marathon pace. Your heart rate's maybe sitting more around that like 165 to 175 range. You aren't asking a heap of the body. And then slowly over time, we'll start to incorporate more intensity, because it is like the intensity and the distance where we do require a lot of energy from you. And if you don't have that energy, it's where you're going to go into that low energy availability state again. So it's just like increasing that ever so slightly. And just being patient. I think something that we are not great at is being patient and just letting the body kind of do what it needs to do in order to build a really sustainable base. So you just have to be patient. There's no point rushing back. Like, it's hard now in this day and age. There's so many people running and so many people racing, and it's, you get real FOMO if you're not doing that as well. But you just have to be, you have to have a real long-term approach to it, and focus on where you want to be in 6 months or 12 months, not in, say, 6 weeks. So, yeah, you've got to do
it. Totally. Years even. You know, it takes years and years of consistency to, I can't remember who it was, but someone told me, like, you really need to earn that second speed session per week. And we have running programs for new runners who are doing 2 speed sessions in their, you know, a week, and they are new runners. It's insane. Like, that is so much stress on your body. And to expect that you're going to be able to handle this complete change in, you know, what your body is doing and not get injured physically, mentally, is really unrealistic. It is. It's, you know, the things, you know, consistency over years is how we get better at running. And I think that's a bit of a nice metaphor for life. We have this instant gratification society where we want food, we can order Uber Eats, it can just get to our door now. You know, we don't need to be very patient for many things in our life. So maybe having that ethos of running is good for kind of, I don't know, thinking about life and how we approach life in general.
Definitely. That's why I love running. It's like the reward after like years and years of training and being so proud of all of that work, not just like a six-week condensed block that you've just done to like get to where you are.
And knowing that if you decrease your training load for a little while, you're not going to lose all your fitness. You know, people have babies and they come back and win gold medals after pregnancy, and they have probably decreased their training during pregnancy by 50%. They're not doing their speed sessions, or they've been injured, or other things happen. And when you have those years of consistent training, your body can go, you know, periods where we do decrease your load and all your fitness doesn't disappear. So that's the other part of it, is knowing that, you know, if you can come back, you're not going to lose all your fitness. Don't worry, by, you know, decreasing, not doing any speed session. There's a lot for, you know, for me right now, my body, I just can't really handle mentally any speed work. I'm just doing, you know, trying to stick to an okay volume and just do some easy sessions. And I know I'll lose some fitness, but I'll get that back pretty quickly when I'm in a place when I can do that speed work. And that's because I have had consistent volume for years and years and years.
Yeah. And then, so once we're like back into full running after reds and we are feeling really good, are there any red flags that we should look out for that maybe are telling us that we need to maybe take a pause or increase our calories and increase our nutrition again?
Really, those signs of reds that we talked about. But, you know, obviously anytime anyone gets a bone stress reaction, that to me is a big red flag that, you know, not all the time. Sometimes, you know, I'm seeing people who are doing a race every 3 weeks and then they're getting a bone stress injury. I'm like, this is not a hormonal problem. This is that you were doing a race and then doing another one 2 weeks later and then another one 2 weeks later. But yes, I think those warning signs are and that's where some symptom diaries and symptom checklists can be really good. Because we're all going to have some crappy weeks, but if we see that consistently over time, but yes, it's really those other signs of reds is what we would worry about.
Awesome. Love it. Last question for you is, what's the one thing you wish every runner knew about fueling and hormone health?
That you're not losing weight doesn't mean that you're not eating enough. That would be my one thing. There's a couple of other things I would love to say, but if I could say just one thing, that your weight is stable doesn't mean that you're not eating enough. And if you eat enough, you will just perform and train and recover and feel better.
Preach. I love that. We will be following this up with Sarah Widdowson next week, and we're going to go really into the depths of the nutritional impacts, or the new, what is, what do we call this? The take on nutrition, and in terms of how we can fall into REDS, but then also how we can use nutrition to get out of REDS and build a sustainable relationship with running and just feel better in our health and in our bodies as well. So definitely come back for that one. But thank you so much, Izzy. This is, like, again, such an important conversation to be had, and we're so grateful for all the knowledge that you have. And we'll be tagging Dr. Izzy into our show notes, so you can go ahead and check her out on Instagram, but also we'll tag our other episodes that we've done with Dr. Izzy in the past as well, because they're all worth listening to. But thank you so much, Izzy, and I'm sure we'll have you back very soon.
I have said that, please.